I forgot. I did want to mention one other thing. That I was at a ministers' meeting in Cedar Rapids today, and if there's anyone who's interested in this problem of human trafficking, there is going to be a conference in Cedar Rapids this week on human trafficking. It's going to be held at New Covenant Bible Church. It's being put on by the Department of Homeland Security and the Network Against Human Trafficking. And it's going to be held at this church. The church is hosting it. It's this November 17th, which I think is, what is that, Thursday? Well, I just thought I'd let you know. So, yeah. It's November 17th. It's from 8:30 in the morning to 4 in the afternoon. It's a one-day conference, 8:30 to 4:30 in the afternoon. But it's a great resource. If you have questions about this, they're going to go into the whole thing of human trafficking and how it impacts places. And I know we've talked about that and prayed about it before. It's a problem in a lot of different places in the world. But that's available right in Cedar Rapids. I just found out about it today. Okay. I think we finished chapter 24, 2 in Habakkuk, so we're about to start chapter 3, I believe. This chapter can be divided up into four sections. Verses 1 and 2, Habakkuk's petition. Verses 3 through 7, God's appearing. Verses 8 through 15, God goes to war. Habakkuk's response, verses 16 to 19. It's a simple way to divide up this chapter. This is the last chapter in this book, so you might be wanting to think, be considering where you would like to go after this. I mean, we could do a, we're getting into the Christmas season, Thanksgiving season, so we might want to do something around Christmas, or we can do another little book. We did an Old Testament book if you want to do something in the New Testament, or stay in the Old Testament. A short book is the book of Ruth. We can get into the book of Daniel if you want to do that. It's 12 chapters. We'd probably be in it for a while because it's prophecy, so it's a little extended. So be thinking about that. You know, we're kind of where you would want to go to next. You know, maybe if you have questions, you know, topics or areas, or you know. But we're going to probably be finishing this in a few more weeks, so... So just be thinking about where you want to go next. Okay, Habakkuk chapter 3, beginning in verse 1, and we're going to read about the first, we'll read the first 7 verses, I guess. Wait a minute, I've got, that's the first half of that. Where's my other page? I'll have to read it out of here. Don't have my other piece of paper with a copy on it. Habakkuk chapter 3. A prayer of Habakkuk the prophet, according to the Shigionoth. Lord, I have heard the report about you, and I fear. O Lord, revive your work in the midst of the years. In the midst of the years, make it known. In wrath, remember mercy. God comes from Teman, and the Holy One from Mount Paran, Selah. His splendor covers the heavens, and the earth is full of his praise. His radiance is like the sunlight. He has rays flashing from his hand, and there is the hiding of his power. Before him goes pestilence, and plague comes after him. He stood and surveyed the earth. He looked and startled the nations. Yes, the perpetual mountains were shattered. The ancient hills collapsed. His ways are everlasting. I saw the tents of Cushan under distress, and the tent curtains of the land of Midian were trembling. Okay, we'll stop there at verse 7. Okay, so we come to the end of the book. And you'll remember we finished verse 20 last week, and the last thing that God said in answer to Habakkuk was what? Chapter 2, verse 20. So think geography and think what was the context. Remember, God is communicating to Habakkuk. And so that told Habakkuk again, God's in his temple. And so what are the implications of that? What because that's true, okay, well, what do we know as a result of that? God's in control. Things not out of control. The world's not flying off this axis. God's in control. He's in his throne, He's reigning and ruling. And chill out. Be silent. Just chill out. Okay? And so what is Habakkuk's response in verse 1? What's the very first word in this verse 1? Is there a connection between verse 20 and verse 1? What do you do in a And what do you do in a temple? Right. So this is a natural response to what God has said. God has spoken to him. Now Habakkuk's going to talk to God. He's responding. Compare chapter 3, verse 1 to chapter 1, verse 1. What do you notice? Remember how way back, weeks ago, chapter 1, verse 1? Yeah, he's a prophet. Think about it in terms of compare and contrast the types of prayers. But what was kind of things was God's, was Habakkuk saying in chapter 1, verse 1? So has something changed? Which raises the very interesting question, because we just did this little exercise. What do you think about prayer? Does prayer change things? Does prayer change situations? Does prayer change us? Or all of the above? What do you think?
All the above.
Okay, so why do you say that?
Well, prayer is going to have someone praying for you. That can help change. You can pray for yourself if you're fighting through a situation. But you really can't do it by yourself. You look at prayer can change the situation as far as, like, we just went through one election night. Prayer is probably a big part of this country.
Yeah. Well, or situations, things, or yourself, or yeah. So we see he starts with a prayer in chapter 1, verse 1, and he's all kind of, like you said, freaked out. And now he's calm, isn't he? You know. Again, that's part of what the lesson of this book is. We come back to this thing of prayer and intercession. Now, the word for prayer here is very, again, it's a very interesting word. There's a lot of different ways you can look at this concept of prayer. What does the word mean, prayer? It's a word, tefillah. Well, scholars have looked at this word for a long time. It's a very common word in the Old Testament for prayer. Usually, just intercession or the petition of a deity, calling upon a god for help. An intervention, an interpose, or a request to the God. Originally, this word is connected with first. It literally means, it's associated with an Arabic term, which means literally to notch or to put a nick on the edge of a sword. And so it's associated with this idea of cutting or wounding. And they say, well, why is it associated with that? Well, if you look at Deuteronomy chapter 14, verse 1, one of the commands that God gave the people of Israel, he says, "You are the sons of the Lord. You shall not cut yourselves nor shave your forehead for the sake of the dead." One of the ways in which people prayed in pagan culture was to slash themselves, cut with a knife or cut with a sword. again in Leviticus 19:28, you shall not make cuts on your body for the dead. Leviticus 21:5, you shall not make any cuts in your flesh. We have an example of this in 1 Kings chapter 18, verse 28. Remember when the prophets of Baal are with Elijah and they're calling on their God? One of the things they do, 1 Kings chapter 18, verse 28, is the prophets of Baal cried out with a loud voice and they cut themselves according to their custom with swords and lances until the blood gushed out of them. Why did they do that? Get to God's attention. You know, the Mayans in Central America did this, same kind of a thing. It was a way to call upon the God to slash yourself. So this word prayer comes out of that kind of a neighborhood of cutting. Another way to look at this word prayer, another suggestion of where this word arrives from, this word for prayer, it means in the sense of to break into or to cut, to separate, to distinguish. Prayer is a mental process of distinguishment and of making a judgment. We usually pray about things. Why? What's going on in our heads that motivates us to pray? Yeah, and let's elaborate on that a little bit. What drives you to prayer sometimes? Yeah. And it's this idea of a judgment. I make a judgment. The situation's bad. I got to do something. So this is another place from which this word prayer, tefillah, comes from. It's from the same neighborhood. Another way to understand this word is, this word is very closely associated with the Hebrew word to fall down. So what's one of the postures of prayer that people had in the Old Testament? Yeah, fall on their faces before God. All that's kind of contained in this idea of prayer. Prayer is an act of submission. It's an act of crying out to God. What are some other things that are characteristic of prayer? What are some other things? It's acknowledgement of personal weakness. Personal weakness. I can't handle the situation. Yeah, thankfulness. It can be out of an idea of thankfulness. If you think about prayer, prayer is a very, very, very intriguing thing. I mean, do you ever wonder why does God want us to pray? Number one, God is all-powerful, right? Number two, God knows every situation, circumstance, right? God has a plan. He's working out his plan on the earth. Then why on earth should we pray? Yeah. Prayer has a lot of different purposes. It has more of an effect on us than it does on God, you know. But God has chosen to do much of his work in the earth as a result of people's prayers. That's how he seems to choose to work through people's prayers, which is kind of an interesting thing when you think about it, because God invites us into what he's doing on the earth through prayer. Do we like the way the world is? Well, do you like what we see around us? And so, what's one of the things we do to change the world? We pray about it, don't we? We pray about it. That's kind of an interesting thing, isn't it? Don't you think? I mean, God could just do it. And so he invites us into the family business. And what's the family business? The family business is the spreading of the kingdom of God on earth. Thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven. Well, how does that happen? It happens in one way, through our prayers. Through our prayers, we're bringing the will of God down to situations on the planet. Example, does God want someone to feel they have no hope in life, like this guy Mike we just talked about? No, that's not God's will. That's not his will for him to be depressed and desperate. And so we participate in God's will being done in his life through prayer. So as a church and as individual Christians, we should have a prayer life. It's one of the central things that will keep us spiritually healthy and well is to have a regular prayer time every day, even if it's only for 5 minutes, even if it's only God help me today. That should be like breathing. It should be a regular part of our lives. It's one of the ways in which we don't get out of whack like Habakkuk did at the beginning of this book. The world's falling apart. Prayer keeps us at peace. Big part of it. Yeah. So this book is really, it's getting at this whole thing of prayer. Now look at verse 19. We didn't read that verse, but what do you notice about verse 19 here in this book? Chapter 3, verse 19. Yeah. Uh-huh. The very last phrase. Yep, keep going. For the choir director. On my stringed instruments, right? That's what your translation says. So what we have here is we have a prescript and we have a subscript. Verse 1 is the prescript, a prayer of Habakkuk, the prophet. Verse 19 is the subscript for the choir director on the stringed instruments. We have a beginning, we have an end. It's like bookends. That suggests that this portion of the book of Habakkuk was part of the regular worship. They used it as a song, or they sang it, or they read it as part of their liturgy in the temple. They may not have read the rest of the book during that church service or the temple worship, but that those two little points tell us that this particular part of the book was used as one of the songs they sang on Sunday or Saturday, you know. So that just is kind of an interesting little thing. Not every book in the thing in the Bible has that, but this is one that has this structure to it. So it was probably part of the temple songs. They sang, let's all sing the third chapter of Habakkuk, you know. Like we would say, let's all sing How Great Thou Art. It's the same kind of a thing. They had their worship just like we do. Now, have you noticed any strange words or unusual words in verse 1? Like the shaggy dog, right? Or the Shiganoth. Well, it's, as you might guess, it's a much debated term. It appears to come from a verb which means to reel or to go astray or to speak or to move in rapid changes. Most scholars say this is probably a musical notation, referring to the type of song this was, a wandering song. Or we would say a song with an irregular beat. We have songs like that that have an irregular beat. You know, they're not repetitive. They have kind of the meter kind of goes all over the place. The style of the song. Also, this word is associated with a word, which is a little word segu, which means a song of lament. There are lots of songs of lament in the Bible. For instance, Psalm 7, verse 1 is a song of lament. It's a shiganon of David, which he sang to the Lord concerning a Cushite, a Benjaminite. Concerning Cush, a Benjaminite. O Lord my God, in you I have taken refuge. Save me from all those who pursue me and deliver me. So a shiganoth or a shiganon would be a song of lament. You know, there used to be an old hymn of the church called Wayfaring Stranger. I don't know if you ever heard it. It goes sort of like, I'm just a poor wayfaring stranger traveling through this world of woe, but there's no sickness, no toil or danger in the bright world to which I go. You know, it's kind of like a lament, you know, like, oh, Lord, I'm just tired. I want to go home, you know. Well, this is, remember what he's been dealing with in this book. Has Habakkuk been happy in the beginning of this book? No. How does he feel about the world in the beginning of this book? Yeah. Did you ever get sick of the world? Get sick of all the garbage? Just, Lord, get me out of here. You know, and that may be a characteristic of this third chapter. Now, all that's kind of in the language, you know. Well, let's get into the body of the prayer itself. It's a very, what do you notice about the prayer itself? We just, in verse 2, for instance. What is one thing we usually do in prayer when we go to God? Huh? We address him, yeah. And when we go to prayer, we just go, God, how are you doing today? What are we usually doing in prayer? We ask for things. Right, that's what we do. We ask for things. Isn't that what prayer is? We're asking for things from the deity. What kinds of things does Habakkuk ask for in verse 2? How many requests does he have in verse 2? You can count them. Huh? Zero? Zero requests? He doesn't ask for anything from God? Yeah. So what's interesting about how he starts off? Yeah. So remember, chapter 2 is mostly God answering what he's going to do to the bad people, and I'm going to answer your questions back. But here he says, I've heard. I get you, God. I get what you said. I hear you. Is that progress? Is he learned something, or he's got the message? Yeah, it's always good when you go through an experience in life to, at the end of it, have learned something. Because if you don't, what you got to do is go around through the process again. You know, you don't want to keep making the same mistakes. It's okay. It's okay to make new ones, but if you keep making the same ones, you're just not very smart. You know. He has heard God's answer. And he's not only heard God's answer, but what else does he say in his about his relationship to God? Yeah, why might that be important? Yeah, but think about the context of this book. What are all the things that have been happening in the front of this book, the beginning of this book? Remember that group of people who were the Chaldeans? Yeah. And what they're you know, and what kind of things are the Chaldeans doing to the neighborhood there? Burn it down, killing people, stealing stuff, you know. I heard about you, and I fear you. Isaiah 44 says, Isaiah 8, 12 through 14 says, "You are not to say it's a conspiracy in regard to all that the people call a conspiracy." We have conspiracy theories today. "You are not to fear what they fear or be in dread of it. It is the Lord of hosts whom you should regard as holy, and he shall be your fear, and he shall be your dread. Then he shall become a sanctuary for you." Did you get that? Did you hear that? Isaiah 8, 12 to 14. Remember, the context of this book of Habakkuk, he's looking at the world and it's terrifying. The Chaldeans are killing people. Everything's going, it's going to hell in a handbasket. But now by the end of the book, he says, "I heard about you, God, and I fear you." Isaiah 8, I'll read it again, 8, 12 to 14. "You are not to say it is a conspiracy in regard to all that the people, the Gentiles, call a conspiracy. And you're not to fear what they fear or be in dread of it. It's the Lord of hosts whom you should regard as holy. And he shall be your fear, and he shall be your dread. Then he shall become a sanctuary for you." If God is the one who I really fear, if he's the one who's my dread, then I don't have to be afraid of anything else, right? That's what Isaiah is saying. We have a choice. We always have a choice. We can fear the situation we're in, or we can reverence God and see him as high and lifted up and over every situation. God is either in charge of the world or he isn't. And we can be scared by the world and circumstance the situation, or we can always remember there is an awesome God who is greater than every problem in the universe. And see, part of our problem when we get scared by the world, like Habakkuk was, and frustrated, is we forget that God's still in control. See, and as soon as we begin to forget that, then our molehills begin to become mountains. You know, there's nothing in life that's outside of God's control. The problem is we forget that at times, and that's part of what Habakkuk's problems has been in this book. I asked you about the requests. There's three requests in this thing, and what's the first one? And what does that say to you? Revive your work. Revive. To revive. Literally, to make it alive again. It's an imperative verb. It's a request. You yourself, God, make it alive again. Are there things in the Bible that are made alive again? Can you think of other places in the Bible where something came alive again? Huh? Yeah, like Lazarus, yeah. Like Jesus, yeah. In fact, you could say the whole story of the Bible is about how God is going to do what to all of humanity and the earth. Okay, born again, that's kind of like being made alive again. But ultimately, after our teeth fall out and our hair falls out and we get bent over by arthritis, what are we hoping is going to happen to us? We're going to be made alive again, right? Yeah. Make it alive again, Lord. What is his work? Revive your work. The Psalms are full of this. Psalm 71, verse 20. "You have shown me many troubles and distresses. Will you revive me again and bring me up again from the depths of the earth?" You know, when we're staring at the 6-foot hole, you know, we're staring at our own mortality. That's the big question. If a tree is cut down, will it live again? Psalm 119, verse 88. "Revive me according to your loving kindness, that I may keep the testimony of your mouth. Psalm 119:159. Consider how I love your precepts, Lord. Revive me, O Lord, according to your loving kindness. Again, not to press this too much, but this is a very common prayer of the people of God. Make us alive again. Restore us. Bring us back, you know. Does he give you any time words in this passage? Any words that indicate time in this verse 2? In the midst of the years. In the midst of the years. Well, what does that suggest to you? In the middle of the years. When do I want God to make it alive again? When I'm in a bad place, when I'm having problems, when do I want God to make it alive again, make me alive again, change the situation? Right then, right now. Don't wait 50 years to do this, God. Do it now. In the midst of my years, in the midst of this moment. Show forth your power, God, in this moment. Intervene now. You know. Now, again, he's probably remembering what has been some of the works that God has been doing with the people of Israel in Habakkuk's time. What are some of the things God has been doing with Israel? Remember, they're the people of God. They've been brought into the promised land. They were taken captive. Well, this is before they were taken captives. They're not captives yet. Israel started out as slaves in Egypt, didn't they? But they're not. They weren't. What did God do about that? He worked and brought them out, right? How did he work and bring them out? 10 plagues, right? Beat up on the Egyptians. He walked up on the Egyptians, right? Remember the context of this book. What's happening to Israel right now? They're in the promised land, the land of the promise, the land of blessing. And what's happening? By invaders, by the Chaldeans. You know. So do it again, Lord. Do it again. Go get them. Sick God on the Chaldeans. You know, revive your work, Lord. Revive your work. Don't leave us here to be slaughtered by the Chaldeans. You know. It's a prayer for salvation, isn't it? See, what happens over time? God does something in our lives, but then what happens over time? We forget. And so God has to revive it. He has to bring it. Show us again that he's still in business. He hasn't gone on vacation. He hasn't left the country. You know, memory of God's saving acts become dim over time. I mean, that's one of the reasons why we lose faith, isn't it? You know? What have you done for me lately, God? Psalm 98, verse 1. Oh, sing to the Lord a new song, for he has done wonderful things. His right hand and his holy arm have gained the victory for him. The Lord has made known his salvation. He has revealed his righteousness in the sight of the nations. He has remembered his loving kindness and faithfulness to the house of Israel. All the ends of the earth have seen the salvation of our God. How has God made known his salvation? Does he ask for something to be made known in verse 2 here? What's the it? O Lord, revive your work in the midst of the years. In the midst of years, make it known. That's right. Yes. But see, what does that mean? What we're talking about. What are some of the works of God? One of the works of God is his people's deliverance, isn't it? Set them free from being slaves in Egypt. Now the Chaldeans are whopping up on them, beating them up. Deliver us, O God. It's another way of saying, God, deliver us. I know we never ask for deliverance. We never ask God to save us, but, you know, the work of God amongst his people is what? I mean, ultimately. Huh? To make us new. That's right. Yep. To make us new. Redemption. I mean, isn't that the ultimate work of God? What did Jesus say? It's finished, right? The ultimate work of God is our salvation, isn't it? So what is that, again, what does that mean? Are we already immortal beings? Well, I don't know. I had to go to the dentist last week, you know, so I don't have an immortal body yet. No, we're saved right now, but we're not fully. It hasn't fully been realized yet, has it? Ultimately, don't we all want to be resurrected someday? And have an immortal body? That's, again, that's part of the work of God, isn't it? It's what God is doing in the earth. Didn't Jesus come to do this work of saving people's lives? And that doesn't mean just saving them for heaven, but also restoring their lives now. Think about it in terms of, do you know any families that are in trouble? Do you know any families that maybe are facing crisis? Okay. Do you think that God wants to help them? Well, then that would be a work of God, wouldn't it? To see that family restored, whatever it is. Do you know someone who doesn't have hope or doesn't have enough food to eat or something like this? The idea of the kingdom of God coming and God working on the earth is human lives being restored. And ultimately saved eternally. But that's a big project, isn't it? That's what we're all involved in. This is, God and Sons and Daughters, Inc. This is our business, isn't it? This is why the church is here. You know, we're engaged in seeing God work in people's lives. He allows us to participate in this. Here he's praying, make it known. Make your salvation known. Psalm 77, verse 14. You are the God who works wonders. You have made known your strength among the peoples. What's one way that God shows that he's strong? Yeah. Huh? That we're going to get into that when he talks about the pestilence and stuff, you know. Yeah. God shows his strength to us in many different ways, doesn't he? Psalm 111. Splendid and majestic is God's work, and his righteousness endures forever. He has made his wonders to be remembered. The Lord is gracious and compassionate. He has given food to those who fear him. He will remember his covenant forever. He has made known to his people the power of his works in giving them the heritage of the nations. Think about Israel. How big a country is it? Big. Okay. And think about all the nations that have marched against that little country. Huh? It's kind of funny. In fact, it's very interesting, isn't it? Why is that little pipsqueak of a nation still here? Okay. See, God demonstrates his power by preserving his people, doesn't he? Gee, it'd be nice if God would do that for us. What about the church? Does the church always have its act together? Well, of course, we're the smartest people, right? That's why. The church always have enough money? No, we have political connections, though. How does God show his power in the church? Yeah. Church doesn't go out of business, do they? Survives in a world of darkness. Everybody else saying you Christians are nuts, you know, that's old passé. We don't do that anymore around here. One of the amazing miracles of God is the surviving of the church. It doesn't have the best leadership, certainly doesn't have enough money, isn't the best education, and yet somehow it survives. That's a demonstration of the power of God. Exactly. That's a demonstration of the power of God. The deliverance of his people, his work goes on, doesn't it? I mean, kingdoms, Soviet Union tried to stamp out the church. Church is still there, you know, still thriving. So one of the ways that God makes known his power to his people is he preserves them. You know, it isn't that we have great faith, it's that God is very faithful. So make it known. Let's see it again, Lord. Do it again, God. We're in the midst of this. The Chaldeans are on our heads. Do it again. Revive your work. Make us alive again. Make it known. Show them and show us that you're the living God. Show up, God. Please, show up. Isaiah 26, verse 9. Very important verse. At night my soul longs for you. Indeed, my spirit within me seeks you diligently. For when the earth experiences your judgments, the inhabitants of the world learn righteousness. When the earth experiences your judgments, the world learns righteousness. What does God do when he starts moving the earth? Earthquake comes coming. What's the first word out of people's mouths when the earthquake comes? Oh, God. Right? Yeah. God help me. God save me. God, one of the reasons God shakes the earth is to remind, just to remind people who's in charge. You know, it's another way that God shows his power. Then there's one more request in verse 2. What's the last request? Yeah, but there's an important little prepositional phrase there. Before remember mercy. What comes in front of? In wrath, remember mercy. Well, what on earth does that mean? Well, what's the wrath of God like? What's it like when God rolls up his sleeves and begins to... Effective, yeah. Effective is a good word. I mean, when God gets angry and begins to deal with sin, is it a little bit or... Yeah. When God lets loose... Huh? Yeah, but it's one thing for us to get angry and blow our top. It's another thing for God to blow his top. He's saying, when you let loose here, God, please do what? Remember mercy. Why? Collateral damage. The words of collateral damage. Innocent bystander. What did Jesus say? He said, in those days, it'll be so bad. We'll find a verse here. For then there will be great tribulation. Why? Because the earth is given, the people of earth have given God the middle finger. God sends great tribulation on the earth, such as has not occurred since the beginning of the world until now, nor ever will. Unless those days had been cut short, no life would have been saved. But for the sake of the elect, those days will be cut short. That's coming. Those are verses written to us, our time. Jesus says, pray that your flight won't be in the winter or on a Sabbath, for there will be great tribulation. When God unleashes his wrath on this earth, please, God, remember mercy. Please. How about for America? If we get upset with the corruption we see around us, how do we think God is? Feels about it. He sees it even more clearly than we do. So, revive your work, God. Make it known. Reveal it. Let people see it. And when you let loose, God, remember mercy. Please remember mercy. Because if you don't remember mercy, we'll all be wiped out. Psalm 25, verse 7, do not remember, Lord, the sins of my youth. You know, according to your loving kindness, remember me. Psalm 25, verse 7. Psalm 79, verse 8, same kind of a thing. Do not remember the iniquities of our forefathers against us. Let your compassion come quickly to meet us. So in the midst of judgment, remember mercy. You know. When you start to wail, when you start to let loose, Lord, remember mercy. Because when God lets loose, it's not like you or I letting loose. You know, it's not us getting mad. It's serious business. That's all in those first two verses. That's his petition. Any questions about what we covered? Any ideas there, questions about that? So this was a prayer that probably was used as a song. Verse 1 and verse 19 tell us that. Their bookends. This was probably sung an irregular beat, like we said, a shiganoth, a wandering song, a lament. And he has three requests in the opening verses. And those are the ones we just covered. So any other thoughts or questions? Now, I gave you the map. You can find the Sinai Peninsula on it. You look in the Sinai Peninsula to the right side, and you'll see it says Paran, wilderness of Paran. That's what we're going to get into. It would be on the right side of the Sinai. Sinai is kind of like a piece of pie, shaped like a wedge, shaped like a piece of pie. It would be on the right side, the wilderness of Paran. That's verse 3 that we read. And that's also where this place, Tema, is located. Tema means south or on the right. It's a district below the land of Edom. It was named, this Teman was a grandson of Esau, and Esau is in the southeast there, southeast of Israel, the land of Israel. That's where the land of Edom was. And this place was basically on the route as they came up from Egypt. As they came out from Egypt, they went through this wilderness of Pan. They went through by this place, Tema. The Red Sea has those two legs that go up like this, you know. There's one on this, on one side of the Sinai and one on the other side of the Sinai. Are you looking at the maps? Do you see that? Well, it's a map I handed out. I mean, I only had... it might be. On the top of the second map 2, probably. Map 2. Let me just look at this. Map 2. You see it says Ezon Geber on the right side, the Gulf of Aqaba. Well, that Ezon Geber would be where this Teman was. And the wilderness of Paran. It was on the course of their coming from the wilderness. Okay? And if you remember verse 3, we read verse 3, but we'll just read it again. Verse 3 said, God comes from Teman. He comes from Teman. And that was verse 3. Let me read it again. God comes from Teman, and the Holy One from Mount Paran, Selah. Selah. Think about it. Think about it. Pause. Notice what he's doing here. He's made a prayer request, and now he's going to make a statement about something that God did. And he gives you two geographical references. There really are parallel lines, really, from Teman, from Mount Paran. What is that a reminder of? What is he reminding them of when he points out these two geographical locations? Geography is very important in the Bible. And why is it important for him to be reminded of the Exodus? What is that so significant in Israel's life? Right. And whenever we're in a bad situation, it's always important to remember how God delivered us in the past. I had a problem last week. God took care of it. When I'm in a, got a problem this week, what I got to remember? God took care of it. God came from Teman. God was there in the wilderness with us. The Holy One from Mount Paran. Selah. Think about it. Think about it. This is all part of his prayer. And as we sing that, we're singing a song like, for instance, How Great Thou Art, O Lord my God, when I in awesome wonder consider all the worlds thy hands have made. I see the stars, I hear the... It's the same kind of thing here. God came from Teman, God was from Paran. Remember what he did in the Exodus. See, that's part of the song, it's part of the prayer. We'll stop there, I guess. It's five after, so. Okay.